The situation on the ground there right now, we keep hearing that it's chaotic.
I don't know if I would say chaos from many of the neighborhoods I've seen. You know, a lot of people have banded together, and they're patiently awaiting aid or whatever sort of assistance is going to come. In some parts of the city, there's plazas, parks full of people just kind of patiently waiting, sharing what little resources they have, food and other things. In other parts, people are kind of slowly rebuilding or cleaning up from, you know, the rubble and the damage to their homes.
What is being done about the dead? We hear reports that the bodies are lying on the streets.
It depends on the neighborhood you go to, and it's hard to kind of assess what is a big sprawling city in one go. You know, this morning we drove around a number of neighborhoods and we saw several piles of bodies. You know, most of them are sort of set aside respectfully. They're covered, but, you know, no one has come to claim them. We drove around to some different neighborhoods this afternoon and saw similar things, and then all of a sudden there was a police caravan with about six or seven construction vehicles that were working to clear some of the rubble and pick up some of these bodies. So it's unfair to say that they're not doing anything, but it is an enormous task, and the kind of equipment that they do need and the personnel they need to do this it makes it certainly a very, very difficult job.
As the supplies come in from the outside world to the airport and the seaport, how are they getting them out of there to where the people are?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, from what I've seen, where have I seen emergency supplies being delivered? And that's not to say that they're not being delivered, because I was at the airport yesterday and I saw the planes arriving, but a lot of people, a lot of residents are asking, where are the supplies? The one fortunate thing in this disaster is that for the most part, the roads, at least here in Port-au-Prince, are intact. That's not to say that it's easy to get around the city. You know, the roads, even in good condition here, are in pretty bad shape, but they're not in any worse shape, and traffic is certainly flowing. From what I can tell, the international teams out, I see soldiers and what looks like security personnel, and like I said, I saw this one team of, you know, Haitian police with some of these foreign donated construction vehicles. So it seems that, you know, the number one priority is making sure that everyone's safe first, and then maybe the supplies will start coming. We hope that they certainly are coming, because there are people who are, like I said, they seem to be pretty much patiently awaiting the arrival of these things before supplies run out.
Is there still a search effort underway? Do they still believe there are people in the rubble?
There are people searching. I don't know if there's any hope for the living. We passed by a number of what are probably four or five-story concrete buildings that just were completely flattened. And up on top, you can see people trying to search in the rubble as best they can with their bare hands, or what I assume are, at this point, people who have perished in the disaster. I haven't heard any stories about search and rescue dogs or other things, people looking for survivors in the rubble. I think it was yesterday there was at least one person taken from the UN compound up in Hessianville, but it's hard to tell because, like I said, the city is so spread out, and the needs are just so spread out as well.
The main hospital was badly damaged. What is being done to help people, the triage that's needed?
There are several hospitals around the city that are functioning, smaller ones. They're doing as best as they can. Last night we visited one. There were a number of people in the courtyard of the hospital, even more inside. Off to one side in front of the hospital was another pile of people who had died. We talked to one doctor who said, you know, we're doing the best we can. A lot of people don't want to go inside the building because of still traumatized from the earthquake. Walking around today, we happened to stumble upon a group of U.S.-based missionaries who had set up in what was a big piece of concrete in front of a demolished building. They were treating some of the wounded. Two people walked past me as I stood there for just a few moments, one man with a damaged hand and another young boy being carried, apparently had a foot or a leg injury. This was a group that had been in Haiti before the earthquake hit, so they were kind of set up. In a sense, that is one of the fortunate things about Haiti. It does receive a lot of assistance from the United States and elsewhere, so there are a lot of groups who are here on a regular basis and are in a position to offer aid. Obviously, they can't help everybody, and the country's official medical system is certainly struggling as well.
Those who are there regularly to help the Haitian people, they too must have suffered casualties in this earthquake.
Absolutely. You know, I don't have any specific stories, but I certainly know that having driven around, you see some of the bigger buildings have just completely fallen down. So, you know, the United Nations, from what we understand, is the one who has suffered the greatest. Their headquarters was built into a hillside, and it really suffered from the earthquake. A lot of it was damaged. A lot of these groups do have big compounds. They have a lot of personnel who work with them, and they obviously have a lot of supplies. And in an earthquake, it's kind of impossible to secure and manage all of those things. I'm sure a lot of these groups are doing the best they can, but again, when it comes to an issue of personnel, a lot of people still are unaccounted for, and up until just a few moments ago, telephone communication was not possible. So there's still people looking for their family and friends, and I imagine a lot of the aid groups are still looking for their workers and loved ones.
You say that telephone service has just been restored. What about electricity?
Electricity is down across the entire capital here. Driving around, the power lines are just completely ripped out. So restoring that will be very difficult. And I imagine restoring landline telephone service will be as equally difficult. Cell phones, from what I've seen, seem to be intact. A lot of the cell phone towers I've noticed seem to be standing. So as long as they're still connected to the network and getting electricity, they should be working.
Are people taking advantage of the darkness and the chaos? Is there looting?
From what I've seen, no. I haven't heard any reports. We drove around a little bit last night, and it is completely dark. There are no lights anywhere. There are very, very, very few people outside. At first, you wonder if everyone has just left the neighborhoods, but there are people during the day. Everybody comes out. So people are here. I think at night, everybody just stays home and stays quiet. You know, from what I've seen, people are sharing what they have, you know, the food and supplies they have, and everyone is being patient, hoping the situation is going to improve, that some of those emergency aid supplies are going to start being distributed. You can tell that in a few days, things are going to get much worse. Supplies are going to run out, and if more bodies aren't cleared from the streets and some of these health conditions addressed, then the conditions will get much worse, and I'm sure we will see looting, and I'm sure we will see people getting desperate.
At the international airport, which is open, what's the scene there? Have you had a chance to go out there?
We just drove by about an hour ago. We drove through. There's probably a few dozen standing at what used to be the doorway into the terminal building. I think they're hoping that by some stroke of luck that they can get a flight out of the country. No surprise that people want to leave. We took a tour right shortly after we got in. The terminal building is severely damaged, but the rest of the facilities and the runways seem to be functioning normally. Where I am right now is pretty close to the airport, and we can hear airplanes coming and going all day long. So we assume those supplies are coming in, and some people are being evacuated. One person was told that American citizens and French citizens are allowed to leave. They must be having evacuation flights. I don't have the details on that. But it is a busy scene, you know, and there's a lot of foreign journalists who have come, and they can't make it much further than the airport. a lot of hotels are damaged. There's nowhere to stay. Communication is very difficult. So, you know, one of the parking lots is just kind of full of foreign journalists trying to cover the story here as best they can. And no idea when commercial flights will resume here into Port-au-Prince. It would probably be weeks, if not months, just to get the passenger terminal back up and running. And I'm sure a lot of the foreign airlines aren't eager to come back in here when conditions are so bad.
Final question, Brian. Coming from Miami and suddenly arriving in a situation like you've encountered in Port-au-Prince, what was your reaction? What was your feeling as you first saw what had happened there?
This is my third trip to Haiti, and my first thought is that sadly, you know, Haiti is accustomed to catastrophe, and this is just another catastrophe in the nation's history. Haitians have a lot of dignity to persevere in these situations, and a lot of people are continuing forward. You know, they don't let it really get them down, but it's a major blow to a country that was struggling and was just about trying to get back on its feet for decades. It's struggled with its hopes for self-sufficiency, and this certainly comes as a blow, and also a big blow to the government that was hoping to be seen as a model institution for a country in its position.